Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Life is good if you're an Arsenal fan right now. The North London Derby in the bag. You're riding high at the top of the league. Arsene Wenger has shown his face at the Emirates and not been booed unceremoniously.
So we can forget about all the,
latter years.
Yeah, I mean,
the latter 30%.
The unpleasantness.
Yeah. And to cap it all off, Ian Wright is on the second captain's world service this week. Hey, Murph.
All right, on. How are you? You're table thumping already.
I know.
Barely 30 seconds into the promo and you're thumping some tables.
Would you have known Ian Wright was 28 when he signed for Arsenal? Patton just told you.
Well, I remember him mainly as a Crystal Palace player.
What?
I mean, my main memories of Ian Wright are as a Crystal Palace player.
Are you serious?
No, of course not.
Oh,
but I do remember. But
I was like, how many goals do you have to score for Arsenal for you to forget about
the 1990 FA Cup final?
I know, I do remember.
As a substitute, scores two goals. Unbelievable.
Well, it was Wrighty and Brighty, wasn't it?
Wrighty and Brighty. Like, come on. It's an extremely redolent nickname.
Yeah.
At a very, specific time in my football watching career. That FA Cup run, that FA Cup final and replay are seared onto my brain for some insane
reason. Well, as a Manchester United fan, you obviously then had to deal with Ian Wright being provocateur in many of those fixtures.
Yes.
During the heady days of that rivalry. But yeah, he was 28 when he signed for them, and yet he still had the time and the ability to write himself into Arsenal's illustrious history.
Bergkamp. On Wright, what a way to get it! He couldn't miss! And all the tension, all the fretting over the past few months, as we've all counted, no one more than Ian Wright himself. He is now Arsenal's all-time greatest goalscorer. 179 goals for the club. 6 years of scintillating service here. And when the goal came, probably the easiest of the lot.
Martin Tyler on commentary there as Ian Wright broke Arsenal's goal-scoring record, which had belonged for so many years to who, Murph?
Cliff Baston.
Yes, and not Marco Van Basten, as you said on today's podcast. You didn't actually say Marco Van Basten, but you did say Van Basten.
Yeah, I'm not going to go around explaining myself, but Google the 1948 All-Ireland winning team for Waterford in the All-Ireland hurling final. Okay, that's all I'm going to say.
These days, Ian Wright is one of my favourite pundits. I think he gets the balance bang on between tactical analysis, being able to talk about the wider issues around the game that pundits need to be adept at now, and also having a bit of a laugh while he's doing his punditry. And this is a balance he took a long time to get right in his own head, as he explained to our World Service members today. Wright, you may remember, didn't go straight into football punditry after finishing up playing. Instead, he took the unusual step of hosting TV chat shows. But why?
Agents. I wanted to do 2 years of nothing. And maybe in those 2 years, I could have took my time to maybe do the badges just to have them. But in the end, I had agents that were very much wanting to continue on the commission side of things and making sure that the money was still flowing. I'm not even going to lie about that. I've got to take some of the responsibility of not sticking to my guns and saying, that's what I want to do. But then all of a sudden you're interviewing Mariah Carey and Denzel Washington and Elton John and that. You kind of get a little bit lost in your head with, wow, I'm Michael Parkinson all of a sudden. And so, it was very hedonistic for me. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then what happened is that you're in it for a couple of years, guys. And then I started to realize this isn't where my passion is. This is not what I want to do. You know, I'm in television studios, continually having to re-record stuff and wait on big superstars, whether they're going to turn up on time or not, or they might just turn up out of the blue and you've got to go and do it, whether you're ready or not. I didn't like the way it was, and I don't like the falseness of the whole world in respects of light entertainment and shiny floor stuff. But like, I missed football. And I remember it was, I think Niall Sloan was at the BBC, and I went and done it, and I really enjoyed it. I've done the first one. I've done one with Des Lynam, and I really enjoyed doing it. But at the time, it was pure vibes and just like personality. You know what I mean? I would not be able to look back at the stuff I'd done then. And if anybody shows it to me, I would be very angry with them and the stuff that I was doing, because punditry and the way it is now is totally different to how I see it now, how it was then. Because I was just having fun then, just going off of vibes. But like once I really got into it and realized that this is where my passion lied, it wasn't with the television, it wasn't with the interview shows and the Friday nights all rights and stuff like that. I needed to be involved with football. And so, you know what I mean? Once I got in, then I started to really say, right, let me get going with this, because I do love it. I love it more than anything. To be able to have played football for a living, then talk about it, I'm really blessed in that respect.
So when you were like, what I mean, when you were doing punditry in the early days, you didn't really approach it as a serious job, or what? So what was your idea at that stage? Like, I mean,
I still saw the game, and you said stuff when you saw the game in respect to the analysis. But I found that I didn't get the opportunity to speak as much as I wanted to, because everybody saw me as the jovial guy. I remember saying doing an interview, saying they saw me as a bit of a court jester, because you'd have Alan Hansen would answer a question, Alan Shearer might answer one, and then by the time it comes to me, there's nothing really to say but the like Gary Lineker's kind of finishing joke to link to the next bit.
And finally, Ian Wright, yes, for some banter.
Yeah, and it felt like that, but what people didn't see was during the game, I would make observations. I'd make observations of stuff that was happening on the pitch. And then Alan Hansen would nick it off me. So before...
Are you serious?
Yeah. He would just mention it.
Well, that's shameless. Did he do that more than once?
Yeah, but remember my inexperience at the time, just watching the game and said, oh my gosh, look at the right back. If he does that again and they pass it there, then all of a sudden Alan Hansen was... Like Gary Lineker would obviously go to him first. And so Alan Hansen, what I learned very quickly to not do anymore was... I would say something, and he would say that. So then what I'm thinking I'm going to get to say by the time they come to me with my question, it's gone.
Did
it's
you ever have words with him about that? Like, maybe no. I'll stop stealing my... No.
No, not at the time, no, because like what that showed me is that I had to learn to stop talking, bro. But the fact is that my problem is I'm so passionate when I'm watching a game, I just say what I'm seeing. I say, oh my gosh, look at that. He's gone too far up. And then he'd nick it. Didn't it my stuff? So then so, you know what I mean? And so that's what happened. You ask anybody. If you ever speak to Shearer, ask Shearer if he nicked any stuff off of him. Oh. But like, you know something? And then I started to get very frustrated with it, because then you can't get to say anything. And even when the time came where you did, that the counting you down. So then you're starting to get your words mixed up because you're trying to speak fast and they're counting you down. And then you know, so I started to not enjoy it as much. It used to be like, oh gosh, here we go again. You know what I mean? And again, people used to say things like, why is Ian Wright last all the time? And I remember there was one time Gary Lineker had done something to me, which was really quite, which he does anyway, is that he came to me first out of the blue without telling me. Yeah. And I was a little bit stumped by it. And what I said... I said something, and then he kind of like made reference. Okay, came to you first, and then bam, he went on, and it was like, "Bro, you just put me away."
Why didn't he say to you, "I'll come to you first"?
All he needed to do, yeah, well, that's all he needed to do at the start. Just say before, you know. Listen, I'm going to come to you first, right? So get ready. Yeah. But he didn't, and so it was again. It turned into a jovial, jokey moment, which probably would have sufficed, but it wasn't. Now I look back at it, I realized. That, you know, I was literally being the butt of jokes some of the times, which wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
My confidence. It wasn't good for my confidence.
Well, what did you do then? Like, how did that change in your head? Was it something that you kind of thought about and came to the realization, I need to change, or was it the whole environment of punditry kind of did change a bit?
I tell you, what happened is at the time I was on a radio station, and I'd done a piece in the newspaper talking about how I feel punditry should be. And I was being very frank about it without being so outlandish, telling you like what Alan Anson used to do to me in respect of nicking some of the stuff. But what I did say was, I don't like the way it is. It's too formulated. It's too rigid. People should be more relaxed. People should be jovial, more jokes in respects of banter with each other. So it shouldn't be your question, then your question, then your question, then back to you and stuff like that. And so I said that in a column and they didn't like it. The BBC, they didn't like it. And I was literally off television. It worked out to about 9 years. So in the end, I just done radio, Absolute Radio, who were unbelievable to me. And I used to cover the football. And all that done is just put me in a place where I've done more research. I've done a lot more stuff in respect of trying to find out more about being given information and trying to give insight. And I started to enjoy it a bit more. And so then what happens was, I was doing that, doing the radio. And to be honest, I had to go to Saudi and that a couple of times to do some stuff with Al Jazeera at the time it was. And I used to get a lot of time to speak. And I just found my love back for it. That's all what happened. I got my love back for it. And then I came back to England when I was doing my stuff in England. And then ITV wanted me to do something for Laurie Cunningham, who unfortunately passed away, and they was doing the documentary on him. And people said, well, you can't do it. You've got to have Ian Wright involved in it. You know, Laurie Cunningham was his idol and this and that. And they didn't want me in at the first. And then in the end, they said, okay, we'll get him into it. But the guy who was my manager at the time said, if you get him in, can you give him a game? So as he could do a game as well. He'll do it if you give him a game. And so I done it. It went really well. And then they gave me a game, Brentford against Chelsea in the FA Cup. And I was very fortunate, because to not be on television that long, to then come back and be on with Martin Allen, who I don't know what he was dealing with at the time, but he made me look amazing. Some of the stuff he was saying, I had to correct him on certain things and then carried on. And so it kind of went from there in the sense of, oh, where's Ian Wright been? And then bam, I came back. And then that's why I came back and went with ITV. And then when I left the agent I had in 2018, and then I got new management, everything kicked on, because we've gone into it in a big way in respects of knowing what we're talking about and getting the nuance and making sure that we've got our narrative right and making sure as well that we know what's going on so as we can talk about it. I've learned a lot from the mistakes I made when I was younger.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing story, Ian, really, to be able to reinvent yourself from this kind of situation where you got a bit trapped into what you are now. And what you are now is a kind of, is a wise man, an elder statesman. Wow. No, really. Like, and you have a reputation for being someone who helps people who are, you know, young football players, even young journalists, that you're someone who can kind of, who they come to and who's helping them out with sort of advice and support, which... Now, what I wonder is, what would you, I mean, this is a general type of question, but I mean, what do you say? One of the big things that's different now, for instance, about when you're on TV compared to when you were starting out, is you can now, as soon as you finish, look, and I'm on Twitter, there's like 2,000 comments on what it is you've just done. So, I mean, what is it, when people come to you looking for sort of help, advice, I mean, how do you, what's the kind of, any pointers?
Yeah, you got to do the work, because that's what I did. It's the work. You got to find out. You know what I mean? I want to know what fans are saying. I want to know how they're training, what they're doing, why things are happening. You find out things so that you're giving not only information, but you're giving insight. That's one of the things I want more than anything else. And when I speak to the people, I said, you know, it's always from a place of love and passion, because it's driven. My football is driven by that. It's pure love and passion. And I'm never trying to take the piss out of people. I'm never trying to, I'm never trying to make people look stupid or anything like that. Nothing like that. So when I'm speaking to anybody, I'm saying, make sure you do your work. Make sure you enjoy what you're doing. Give people insight. Speak to people like you speak to people who don't watch football. You're trying to make them understand what's just gone on. And I enjoy doing that. And, you know, when people come up to me now and they say, yeah, I saw you on the World Cup. It was really good. I saw you in the ladies. I saw your match of the day. I really thought what you said there was right. Or some people say, I didn't agree with that. And then some of the time, especially if I'm in the pub, which is always a cool place when you know, if you're sitting there and someone comes up and says, yeah, well, what's happening with Erling Haaland? I didn't agree with what you said about this. I say, and then I'll talk about it with them. I'll just talk about it. And you know what I mean? Because it's about opinions. And this is what I say to people all the time. It's about opinion. So what you're saying out there, make sure if you can back your own opinion and try and make sure you're backing it up with facts.
Ian Wright, what an absolute gent, and what a guest. What a guest he was today. We also talked to him. That's just a little snippet of the chat we had, because we also talk about Arsenal's rampant form this season, of course. He was great on the potential of Evan Ferguson.
Yes.
Big things to say about Ferguson, yeah. And how Brighton need to basically just build their team around him.
And there we you agree.
Go. We agree with that one, Ian. That wasn't too contentious. But the one takeaway is just don't open your mouth if you're on a TV punditry panel with Alan Hansen.
He will steal your ideas.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean he's never even apologized for it. I mean, hey, sorry, this is just the game. Don't blame the pundit, blame the game.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a beautiful summer's day. The breeze is stupendous.
Stupendous. Stupendous.
Would this podcast be even more stupendous without ads?
Without ads?
Ads. If so, then join us for daily commercial-free shows at secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not bumping them up. I'm not Irish. I'm just saying my observations, they are amazing.
Stupendous.
US Murph is showing up regularly on the World Service at the moment because the playoffs are on. He's in great form, isn't he?
He is in great
really
form.
Is. I mean, he's happy.
I hate to narrow down his entire mental state to how well or badly the San Francisco 49ers are playing football at any given time. But the San Francisco 49ers are playing some pretty good American football right now. So Brian Murphy's got a smile on his face.
Next up is, for the 49ers, is the latest installment of their historic rivalry with the Dallas Cowboys, a Cowboys team with a serious issue to address after their kicker, Brett Maher, missed 4 extra points in a row in their previous game against the Buccaneers.
In my lifetime, which is getting up there, one of the biggest changes that Polly Mack, my partner, and I have noticed through the years is the incredible efficiency of NFL place kickers compared to when I was growing up. So when I was growing up, like a 45-yard field goal was like, whoo, baby, white knuckle time, some sweat pouring down the forehead. Nowadays, guys are just routinely kicking them from beyond 50 yards. For example, the 49ers-Seahawks game last Saturday, the Seahawks sort of gasp that put the Niners on edge a little bit was a 56-yard field goal right at halftime by their kicker Josh Myers, I believe his name is. And anyway, he made a 56-yarder no problemo. And so that's where we're at right now. We're like 56-yarders are now, they're not routine, but they're fairly effective 56-yard field goals, which is amazing. Now you think about this guy not able to make a PAT. And as you're, to your point, Caron, that it should be a very close game on Sunday. I'm anticipating a pretty exciting close game. And if it comes down to the kicker, they got a big problem, man. And that's good for the Niners, bad for the Cowboys. And, you know, I've always said through the years, kick, it's just not very romantic or sexy, but kickers write history. They really do. Legacies and lives are determined by kickers throughout the history of the NFL. And I'll just give you 2 blatant examples. One is the Buffalo Bills kicker, Scott Norwood, who missed the field goal that could have beaten the New York Giants. And that one was only in the 40s, guys. I think it was like 47, 48 yarder. And he missed it. And the Buffalo Bills then, and we talked about these guys last week, became the team that never won a Super Bowl despite 4 consecutive trips to the Super Bowl, and also partially inspired the movie Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, right? Laces out. So that kick changed Marv Levy, the coach's legacy. It changed Jim Kelly, the Bills quarterback's legacy. It changed the city of Buffalo's sports culture's legacy. Conversely, your guy Tom Brady, who's the king of the world, who's the master of the universe, had to have two gigantic kicks save his hind. Actually, more than two, but I'll just give you the two from his first ever Super Bowl run. A kicker named Adam Vinatieri, who is one of the best kickers in the history of the game, kicks a field goal through the driving snow to beat the Raiders in 2001 in the playoffs, and then kicks a long field goal to beat the Rams in the Super Bowl that Brady wins. So Brady's legacy has been greatly, and Vinatieri hit several other big kicks throughout the years for Brady. Brady's legacy was greatly bolstered by kickers. The Bills' legacy was destroyed by a kicker. So it's not fun or sexy to talk about, but it ultimately writes history.
Brian, you make everything fun and sexy to talk about, even missed extra points. Come on, that's why we have you on here. You mentioned the Cowboys and the 49ers, this being steeped in history. One episode that sticks out in my head is the catch, the Dwight Clark catch. We've talked to us about that before. Possibly your favorite ever sporting moment, but there's tons of them, right? This is a fixture that gets your juices flowing anyway.
Yeah, I sent out a tweet about this, and it's kind of funny if you look about it. This one is why this one is so cool compared to others. First of all, it's flat out, it's kind of interesting to look. What are the most common matchups in the history of NFL playoffs? Like, I always like to ask for those Irish sporting analogies. Like, what's the most common hurling GAA final of all time? Like, is it Cork,
funny,
Kilkenny?
Just before you joined the call, I referred to it as Dublin Kerry in football.
Okay, there you go.
And
exactly.
As in, like, you're talking about, it's not so much a kind of underdog takes on overdog, but it's like a meeting of giant franchises.
Two legacy franchises that will be there more often than not in the end, right?
Yeah.
Is that you guys must have the numbers. It'd be fun to look up what is the most commonly played football final and what's the most commonly played hurling final in the history of GAA. I need that info.
It's too late now for US Murph, Kieran, but have you got that info?
The info you're looking for is the most commonly played All-Ireland final in football and hurling. 28 times. Dublin and Kerry have met. So I was correct when I suggested that it was probably Dublin and Kerry. 28 times they've played. The hurling is Kilkenny and Cork, 24 times.
No, because you weren't, you see, as that clip went on the World Service, I suggested Kilkenny and Cork, and you didn't seem quite so certain at the time.
Kilkenny and Tipperary have played a lot over the course of the last 15 years. 20 times they've played each other.
Okay, so a bit of distance there.
Listen, I'm just happy to fill in the gaps. You know, it's nice at the end of the week to just sweep up all of the questions we weren't able to answer in real time.
Sign up now to hear our interview with the legend Ian Wright. That's out now. He's in great form. And I'm sure you won't be disappointed. Secondcaptains.com, €5 a month plus VAT for that. You'll hear all episodes ad-free if you become a member. And of course, the Second Captains podcast is part of a creator network. But which creator network?
That would be the one and only, the greatest, the top of the tree, the big cheese, the big dog in the creator network game. That's Acast.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.